Welcome to the Sagebrush Variety Show, sagebrushvariety.org, political commentary and satire. On this week's show, Fritzi Quibben, activist and advocate for corporate persons, empowers us with her inspiring vision of a future where the incorporated may shape a society unhindered by oppressive laws, on this week's essay. And on the Peak Oil Check-In, Carl Ettmeyer discusses controlling your food supply. This week's installment of Homeland Security Level Red is entitled Cheaters. And on the Sagebrush Variety Show Farm Report, we discuss growing carrots. I'm producer Gwen St. Curico. Enjoy the show.
On today's essay, Fritzi Quibben, tireless activist and advocate for corporate persons, educates us about the history of the struggle towards equality for limited liability entities, informs us about the last vestiges of corporate phobia, and empowers us with her inspiring vision for a future where the incorporated may shape her society unhindered by unjust laws and regulations.
During this season, I like to take a moment to consider how far we, as a nation, have come in expanding the recognition of human rights. While racial and gender minorities have gained greater legal standing, the more impressive accomplishment is the strides that we have made for the rights of corporations. In the early days of American history, corporations were chartered to complete one task, like build a bridge. When they were deemed no longer useful for the public good, they were callously disposed of. Over time, they managed to extend their existence and the scope of their power. In 1819, the Supreme Court ruling on Dartmouth v. Woodward decided that corporate charters were contracts. Thus, the government couldn't alter them just to serve the public good or prevent the abuse of power. Freeing corporations of such arbitrary government control gave them a foothold in American society. The 14th Amendment, ratified in the aftermath of the Civil War, laid the groundwork for liberating corporations. Over the course of several Supreme Court cases, continuing even to today, corporations have slowly gained recognition as legal persons. The first cases allowed them to be treated like people in legal cases brought by or against them, finally extending due process and equal protection to them. It has taken corporate persons a long time to gain the civil liberties that other minority groups have long taken for granted. It was not until 1906 that they were protected from illegal search and seizure. Prior to that time, the government was able to look through their books and records at any time. The case of Hale v. Hankel stated firmly that just because the government created the corporation, that doesn't give them the right to make sure they're complying with the law any time they want. This was confirmed in 1978 when the Supreme Court determined that OSHA couldn't perform surprise checks of workplace safety without an administrative warrant. One of the hardest struggles was for corporate persons to gain full freedom of speech. It wasn't until 1947, with the Taft-Hartley Act, that the concept began to be extended to corporate persons. More recently, there have been more insidious challenges to corporate persons' exercise of these rights. For instance, when the Vermont legislature passed a law requiring that all products containing milk from cows injected with bovine growth hormone bear labels announcing that fact, they were blatantly seeking to oppress corporate persons and deprive them of their right not to speak if they didn't want to. Fortunately, the courts recognized this and overturned the law. A more outrageous assault on the freedoms of corporations came in 2002. Assaulted by mean-spirited accusations that they abused and underpaid overseas child labor, the Nike Corporation reacted like any person would. It launched a large-scale public relations campaign, refuting the claims with the occasional untrue statement. Who hasn't told a little white lie once or twice in self-defense? After all, corporations are only human. A suit was brought against Nike claiming that they were using deceptive advertising. Obviously, such counterfactuals weren't commercial speech, just little fibs with nothing to do with business. Some anti-corporate bigots claimed that corporations, as entities with the exclusive goal of making profit, are incapable of non-commercial speech. Eventually, the case was settled out of court, but for a time, a corporate person's right to defend its virtue was severely imperiled. Even in this enlightened day and age, corporate persons face bigotry from those who challenge their right to participate in politics. After all, corporate persons are still the only minority group still denied the right to vote. Any hopes for corporate suffrage are chilled by current efforts to deprive them of the one form of expression they do have, political campaign contributions. Certain campaign finance reform hawks want to take away this form of First Amendment-protected free speech. Under present conditions, forming PACs to collect and contribute money is the only way for corporations to assemble and petition the government. Even this right of free assembly is under assault by bigoted, anti-corporate, self-appointed crusaders. Despite the prejudice that still exists, we must remember how far we've come. In a mere 150 years, corporations have gone from being relegated to the back-breaking work of bridge-building to the brink of full acceptance as citizens. As immortal entities with vast resources at our command, one day we will surely attain our rightful role with no limitations or restrictions on our civic involvement. We shall overcome.
Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
The high price of food and fuel is hitting many households with a double whammy now. When temperatures drop this fall and winter, it will be even harder to keep houses warm and to stay well fed. Fortunately, it's a lot easier for us to control our own food sources than it is to control our fuel sources. Strategies for making ends meet for food can mean using less expensive food. Buying inexpensive food like bulk grains, dried beans, and potatoes can stretch a dollar a lot further than spending it on prepackaged or exotic foods. Knowing how to make delicious meals out of such inexpensive ingredients takes some learning, but good cookbooks can teach a lot. Recipes for A Small Planet and Laurel's Kitchen have been around for a while, and they're still a couple of my favorites. Almost anyone can grow some food, which is a good thing because the world needs a lot more farmers and gardeners at a time when shortages of oil, natural gas, water, and even good topsoil are making it clear that trusting industrial agriculture for our food needs has a limited future. The U.S. needs 50 million or 100 million new farmers within 2 or 3 decades to feed our present population. Those are the rough calculations Richard Heinberg and Sharon Astick have made, based on the U.S. farming population in 1900, when fossil fuels played virtually no role in agriculture, and on Cuba's experience in the 1990s, when their oil imports dropped sharply. Most of these new farmers would be farming a few acres, or even working sub-acre farms, and, as in times past, nearly everyone will need to raise some of their own food, even if they don't raise enough to sell. The good news is that farmers on small plots of land can produce a lot more food per acre than industrial-scale agriculture. And they can do so close to where it is eaten, so cross-country trucking or round-the-world shipping isn't necessary. The recent jump in food prices has already started more people taking control of their food supply. Gardening seed companies are reporting record sales. A Vermont farmer told me that the place where he orders chicks sold 300 chicks last year, and has sold 3,000 chicks this year. There's a lot that you, as an individual or a family, can do to take more control over your food supply. Grow backyard chickens for eggs or meat, or both, as my radio colleague Bucky Bacaw advocates in his weekly backyard chicken broadcast. If you eat meat, learn to cook delicious meals without meat. Buy local, supporting farmers who will be in the area to feed you, no matter what happens to far-flung agriculture. Grow your own greens or tomatoes. You can do it even in window boxes. Learn to harvest and cook wild food plants, sometimes known as weeds. I've had quite a few good dandelion-based meals this year, and my evening pot of greens regularly features delicious and nutritious lamb's quarters. For the more ambitious, learn permaculture design or other approaches to redesigning the landscape to produce more of what we want for less work than you might have thought possible. And remember, we're all in this together. If you have room, plant an extra row in your garden for the food bank. And don't be shy about giving away those extra zucchinis this year. If you or your child is hungry, we have lots of programs for help, including food stamps. If you qualify, they are your right to use as an American. There are also free and reduced school lunches for kids, with many places providing them over the summer, too. And many neighbor-helping-neighbor food shelves and soup kitchens. Being resourceful to get your food needs met can mean both harvesting wild dandelion and lamb's quarters and finding those in your community who can help you. The backstory to today's food crisis includes corporate greed, federal subsidies to millionaire farm owners and ethanol producers, lax food safety standards, and much more. The good news is that you can do an end run around those problems by planting some seeds and harvesting wild plants sustainably. I'm Carl Etnayer, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.
You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, political commentary and satire with an irreverent twist.
Homeland Security, Level Red. The price of security is eternal surveillance. If you have nothing to hide, then you won't mind if we sneak a little peek.
McGill here.
You have time to start another investigation?
I have to be careful not to be an overachiever. I think my supervisor is worried I'm after her job. But if you have something really good, maybe I can tell her, what can we do? These tips keep on coming in and they always turn out to be good. We have no choice but to take this one.
Oh, you'll have to take this one.
What is it?
I got a call from the Green Party of Rhode Island. They've been doing issue work on health care, and they noticed that Senator Solana reversed his voting record on key legislation overnight after receiving payments from CVS retail pharmacy lobbyists for supposed consultant work. Now he works to block the legislation he used to support.
Wow. If you're right, and we can accumulate solid evidence, that'd be a pretty strong case.
We are right, and you'll get a lot, maybe most of your evidence, from public records. That shouldn't divert too many bureau resources.
You know what's amazing? When I was doing political work in Idaho, every time we introduced bills to replace corporate political contributions with public financing, senators and representatives would literally jump out of their seats to accuse us, of eroding public confidence in the legislature.
I've had the same experience. If they don't outright deny stories like this, then it's always, that was the U.S. Congress, or another state, or Senator so-and-so was the one bad apple. Then they go on the attack on whoever's introducing the bill.
I've seen them screaming at grandmothers and nuns for saying little more than, it's a system, not the people in it, or, this isn't about accusing legislators, but about improving public perception.
So are you gonna pursue the case?
I'd like to. I hope I can convince the chief.
This is important. I've all but given up hope that we'll ever get anywhere with traditional grassroots lobbying for political finance reform. But enough high-profile busts like this might force them to acknowledge the issue and deal with it.
You know what would help the Bureau?
What?
It doesn't have to be a secret that public corruption has more cases than we can handle and needs funds. If the Green Party made a public statement that the FBI needs a bigger budget line for public corruption, that would be a win-win campaign.
How?
First of all, you'd get a lot of press for defying stereotypes. No one expects progressives to support the FBI, so that alone is a headline, even if you're only supporting a specific activity or department. Then, people reading a story like that will have a much harder time writing the Green Party off as extreme radicals, and they might listen closer to what your candidates say the next time. And if the Green Party is calling for more FBI funds to investigate public corruption, that might actually help us in Congress. I mean, no politician wants to look softer on law enforcement than the Green Party. And when we get our funding and start busting more Republicans and Democrats, people might start to think even more seriously about giving some Green Party candidates a chance. What do you think?
I don't know, McGill. You make it sound sensible, but I don't know if I have the energy to convince other Greens to go along with that. People are very suspicious about anything FBI.
Oh, come on, you can do it. Can you imagine if for every Green Party activist watchdogging their legislature, like you, there was an FBI agent enforcing public corruption laws like me? Thousands of teams like us.
So, how's Christine?
I know you're just trying to change the subject, but I don't think it's working out.
That's too bad.
The problem with dating in a liberal city is that I'm always fooled into thinking everyone shares my political values. But for most people I meet, they're not really progressive. They just act like it to fit in.
What is she, a closet Ann Coulter?
No way. Nothing that extreme. It's just that she expects me to act like a caveman, pursuing her all the time and taking the lead on everything we do when we're together instead of discussing it. She's like, don't be wimpy, take charge. I'm just not like that.
You know, McGill, some women, even some who call themselves progressives, do rely too much on traditional gender roles. But I have to say that I've met a few men who use the sensitive new age guy thing as an excuse to avoid taking responsibility.
I'm all about personal responsibility.
In what you eat and buy and most of what you do, I'm sure. But I don't know what you're like with your girlfriends. I'm just saying, if Christine is saying you're too wimpy, there might be something to it. Just something to consider.
So how about I do everything I can to get my boss to agree to take this case on, and you promise, if we manage to get a prosecution, the Green Party does a press release praising our good work in public corruption.
Now who's changing the subject? I think I can swing that.
Excellent. It's a deal.
Normally I'd have been thrilled at you showing some spontaneity and just dropping by, but you should have remembered I have a big paper due on copyright law. It's due on Friday, so I need to spend the next 3 days as a total hermit if I'm going to get it done on time.
I know. That's why I brought you my special law paper survival kit. Chocolate-covered espresso beans, eye drops, 4 CDs of music that keeps you going but doesn't distract you, extra-large sticky notes for arranging concepts, an assortment of crazy novelty pens to keep your spirits up, organic blue energy drink, and 3 packs of Italian cookies.
Well, that's very sweet. Why don't you come in for a little while?
I won't stay long. I just wanted to offer my encouragement.
So where'd you come up with this survival kit idea?
I developed it through the course of a couple dozen term papers. My own and my friends.
Your friends, too. Now I get it. This is actually your tried-and-true seduction method.
No.
I wish I had time to let you.
No, really. This is supposed to help you with your paper.
So the seduction part comes later?
Yes.
I'm going to hold you to that. I really hate delaying gratification, though. I guess I'd better ask you to leave before I change my mind. I need to focus. This paper has me totally frustrated.
Why don't you tell me more about it? Maybe I could help.
I'm doing it about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which protects copyright from technology that threatens to circumvent it, like CD copying technology or digicams or even the internet.
That's a pretty big topic, isn't it?
I thought I'd need a big topic for a 20-page paper, but now I'm overwhelmed.
All right. Instead of starting big, let's start small. Pick out a detail that really stands out, and we'll build your paper around that.
Well, the U.S. Copyright Office ruled in December 2000 that organizations distributing music and other radio content over the internet, like community radio stations with web streams, have to pay additional fees to record companies that hold song copyrights.
Royalties?
Yes.
So what's controversial about that?
I don't know.
What did you think was confusing when you first read it?
Okay, get this. If I understand right, the way the fee structure works is anyone doing a webcast has to pay a per-song fee, like 0.07 cents per listener to the web stream. So if there's 1,000 people on the web stream, playing the song costs them 70 cents.
Uh-huh.
Here's the kicker. The royalties don't go to the artist. All the money goes into this big pool and then gets distributed in percentages according to the Billboard charts. So when Boise Community Radio plays someone who's not on the Billboard charts, like Mary Asparagus, The 70 cents just go to, say, Justin Timberlake. Something like that.
You think that's bad or good?
Probably bad. Although, I guess it creates an incentive for artists. Or maybe not. You think I can make this into a whole paper?
Yes. Let me show you my trick for organizing. Let me see those sticky notes and the pen shaped like a rooster.
Wow, that really helped a lot. That's a great start. Thanks, Nick.
Well, I guess I better let you get to it. Call me when you're done, okay?
You know, maybe we wouldn't have to delay gratification after all.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, if you finish my paper for me...
That's cheating.
Law school is about showing you can get the job done. It doesn't matter how. Lawyers are not idealists, Nick.
I'm a lawyer, and I think of myself as an idealist.
You're not a lawyer anymore. You're a cop.
I'm a law enforcement official and a lawyer. Even more reason I can't help you cheat.
Okay, maybe I used the wrong phrase. It's not really like you're writing the paper for me. I already did all the research and we wrote the outline together, so I just need you to show me how to fill in the blanks with the actual words.
That's an interesting argument. Very lawyerly. But I still don't buy it.
Well, I don't have time to argue about it. Take it or leave it. Okay, I'm not going to argue, and I'm definitely not going to beg. So, you have to leave now, but the paper isn't due until Friday, so you can still change your mind.
I'll think about it.
But if I get too far on my own, I might change my mind, so the pressure's on. Just letting you know.
McGill here.
Hey, Nick, it's Phoenix Vanderkamp. Remember me from Quantico?
Sure, of course. You joined the cyber department. They sure have a lot on their plate.
Yeah.
You sound tired. You must be busting your buttons. Can I ask what you're working on?
I've been assigned a lot of anti-piracy.
Yar! You'll never get me, matey.
You want to meet for coffee?
Yeah, sure. Right now?
If you can.
Yeah, I can. Where are you? I thought you were working out of Utah.
I'm working on a case nearby, and I thought I'd check in on you. Where's a good coffee shop?
Beanie's is my new favorite place. It's all fair trade organic. It's at 3421 Neem, just off Pilu. You know how to get there?
I'll use the GPS unit in the bureau vehicle.
Cool. See you soon. Thanks for buying, Phoenix. I know the coffee's a little pricier here, but I think it's worth it.
I agree. This Ethiopian yurga chef is unbelievable.
What I think is really cool is that the kind of people who care about the ethics behind their coffee are the same people who care enough to make the best cup in town. It tastes incredible, and the beans are grown with sustainable agriculture by people who are paid fair wages.
Still took a lot of fossil fuel to get it here, though.
I know that. Geez, you sound like my friend Allison, and she doesn't believe me that there are progressives working for the FBI.
Well, there's not many of us, McGill, and that's why I called you. I'm feeling kind of cruddy about my job, and you're the one person I thought I could talk to about it.
I know the feeling.
At least you have your friend Allison.
I like her. A lot. But she doesn't really understand why a progressive would work in law enforcement. I mean, in theory, she agrees that someone has to bust the true bad guys who break the laws we progressives work to pass. But it was a lot of work to get her to that point, and still, I can't be with her for 15 minutes without her bringing up some isolated case of the FBI or Homeland Security violating someone's civil rights.
Sometimes I don't think they're so isolated.
You, of all people, should know that at worst, it's still a small percentage of all the cases that are totally on the level. Listen, even if federal law enforcement was as bad as progressives say it is, they'd be much more effective at changing things if they balanced their criticism with praise for all the good we do.
All the good we do?
Phoenix, don't get cynical on us. The Bureau needs agents like us to keep the focus on busting the bad guys. Right?
I guess.
You gotta tell me what case has gotten you so upset. I just can't imagine. I mean, if you were working in counterterrorism, between you and me, racial profiling and illegal surveillance is their bread and butter. But cyber? That's no-brainer stuff. Child exploitation, identity theft, online fraud and extortion.
Copyright infringement.
You're upset because you're enforcing copyright infringement.
McGill, even the other cases you mentioned are sometimes not as cut and dry as you think.
How?
Your problem is that you're such a goody-goody that you can't imagine how law enforcement can be politicized and how who gets busted for no-brainer crimes can be questionable.
I can't imagine. I'm just saying it's not automatically what happens in law enforcement. You have to give me solid examples, and I'm not a goody-goody.
I didn't mean it as an insult. Honestly, you're the only person I've met whose ethics are flawless, or at least it seems that way. Like at Quantico when you pointed out to Flig and Chugworth that they were crossing the line with plagiarism by getting a hold of old tests.
They didn't even know it was cheating. They really wanted to pass.
That's exactly my point. You're the guy who always knows where the line is. I admire that.
Thanks. Back to what's going on with the cyber unit.
Right. Most of what cyber crimes does is good work. That's why I applied for the department in the first place. But it's a popular department, and there's a lot of competition for the stuff that sounds all heroic, like protecting children from online predators or old people from internet fraud. I'm stuck with all the anti-piracy stuff.
Arr!
I've heard that one. A lot. It's not funny to me, and anti-piracy is really getting me down.
You're doing a good thing, man. If artists can't sell their work because everyone's stealing it, no one will make anything worth listening to or watching anymore, because there'll be no incentive.
That's the party line. It sounds good, but it's bull. Copyright law has always been about protecting distributors and not creators. For every record label that makes $1 million off some slightly popular new rock band, there's a bunch of musicians who would have made more money working at a convenience store.
Maybe if they had a bad contract with some big record company. But what about all the independent bands that don't get their share of royalties?
You know how the situation works these days? All licensing fees and royalties get thrown into a pool and then get statistically distributed to only the top sellers and only to those who are members of the RIAA. So for most musicians, that means their modest success subsidizes the big guys like 50 Cent, Guns N' Roses, and Britney Spears. They don't get a penny for their music unless they're in the top 10%. It's the same as how all the poorest people in this country subsidize corporate welfare and the military with their taxes, and most of them never benefit from it.
Okay, when you put it that way, I guess it should be kind of a low priority for us feds.
It should be, but the entertainment industry is constantly pushing the government to get involved, and the industry has friends in Congress, so I get to spend my days as an agent tracking down file sharers.
Well, if they're the ones with so much at stake, why don't they just stick with their lawsuits? Why they need us?
Now you're catching on. They do, but the lawsuits tend to flounder in court. So all these arrests are mostly about intimidation. They hire retired law enforcement, give them some uniforms for some of their own busts. But they like the credibility of official government involvement. Besides, they're a bunch of cheap bastards. That's why their lobbyists pushed the Piracy Deterrence and Education Act to get us feds more involved in enforcement. And they're working on a whole new suite of bills just like it in the Intellectual Property Protection Act of 2006. They really love their sequels.
People really shouldn't be downloading when they know it's illegal. If the downloaders got that through their heads, you wouldn't have to spend so much time busting them.
Maybe, but I don't want any part of it. Let me tell you about the last case I was on. I think it was the final straw for me.
Good morning, agents. Please avail yourself of the complimentary coffee provided for this debriefing by the Recording Industry Association of America. Let's hear it for the RIAA. I realize you haven't had a chance to drink the coffee yet, but that was some pretty weak applause. Did I forget to mention the donuts? That's better. But let's not let it leave this room that it takes a donut to get the applause out of the FBI. We wouldn't want to promote any law enforcement stereotypes. Tough audience. Anyway, the RIAA was kind enough to provide the refreshments in appreciation of our work encouraging voluntary compliance, from independent as well as corporate labels in our program to display the new government-sanctioned anti-piracy seal and warning program. We think it's attractive and wonderfully intimidating, and that's why we had this extra-large photo-quality display beautifully framed for this debriefing room, as I will unveil for you right now. The FBI's cyber division recognizes the importance of the problem and stands ready to meet the challenge. Through working partnerships with other law enforcement entities, the Department of Justice, and the recording industry, we will continue to devote significant resources in pursuit of those who steal copyrighted music. Unfortunately, Chief Agent Culkin has already uncovered a dark and destructive force working against us. Chief Agent Culkin?
Thanks, Chief. I also brought a blow-up, less lovingly and expensively produced, of course, of an opposition logo which is being circulated by a handful of rogue labels who are apparently and inexplicably pro-pirate. See for yourselves. This warning artist supports file sharing seal is designed to fit in the slot normally filled by the FBI's new FBI anti-piracy warning seal that graces the backs of so many new CDs thanks to our successful outreach. The cyber division has been tracking a blogger we suspect may be responsible for this outrage, and one of his posts reads, and I quote, "You need something to alert your customers that they won't face 20 years of prison time for letting a friend download your album. In an effort to combat the anti-piracy seal, an alternative logo for artists who aren't concerned with file sharing and federal-level copyright infringement has been created. I think this is cool, and I hope some artists start releasing their CDs with this seal on it." End quote.
Something funny, Phoenix?
No, Chief. I mean, that's outrageous.
Yes, it is, Agent Vanderkamp, and that's why after today's big bust, I want you and Agents Gabor and Albedo to fan out and go through the stacks of the record stores and compile a list of labels participating in this insidious project.
Great.
Ooh. Thank you. Now, before Chief Agent Culkin goes over the plan for today's bust, I thought you'd all derive some inspiration from my appearance on the FBI This Week radio show.
Film piracy. That's a major motion picture illegally recorded with a camera from the screen in a theater.
The Department of Justice takes the protection of intellectual property rights and fighting piracy very seriously.
That's Laura Eimiller at the FBI's office in Los Angeles.
The losses actually can directly affect our economy, so the FBI places a high priority on this type of crime and will investigate it thoroughly.
Eimiller says the film industry isn't happy.
According to the Motion Picture Association of America, the worldwide motion picture industry incurred losses of over $18 billion in 2005 as a result of piracy.
A recent case had a guy arrested. He skipped town and became a fugitive and was caught in Los Angeles recently.
The subject was able to obtain screenings to movie before they were released, which made them actually more valuable when he copied them, because these movies had not yet been released in theaters.
If you think you have a pirated film, call the nearest FBI office. I'm Neil Schiff of the Bureau, and that's what's happening at the FBI this week.
That was really inspiring. Let's give it up for Chief Eyepotter.
Eyemiller.
Okay, great. Here's a photograph of our target.
Ooh.
This is Jonas Melansky.
Oh.
You have something to add, Vanderkamp?
He was the star quarterback for Troy the year they won the Chalupa Bowl.
Very observant, Vanderkamp, but was is the operative word here. Your pal Melansky is possibly the most ruthless, persistent, criminally insane supervillain the file-sharing underworld has seen thus far.
I didn't know you were a football fan, Vanderkamp.
I'm not. Some years it's just a challenge to get any news without being subjected to that garbage. Just last year, people were using him and his teammates as a shining example of everything from the power of prayer, to the virtue of hard work, the wisdom of the nation's founding fathers, to the rewards of a law-abiding and authority-obedient life.
And the fact that he, of all people, can stray so far from the righteous path is exactly why we have to make an example of him. As this beautiful framed anti-piracy seal attests, these are serious crimes with serious consequences, including federal prosecution, if the wrong choices are made about copying or uploading music without permission. Consumers need to be aware of them.
Now here's how we're going to bring Melansky down. Be ready for anything. Remember, This is a star quarterback we're talking about. Think O.J. Simpson. Van de Kamp and Albedo, you'll secure the perimeter of the co-ed dormitories.
Jonas, please come to the student union building and have some fresh thawed pizza product with me. Please?
In a minute.
Please, I'm your fiancé.
Missy, I'd love to, but I'm managing the download of some very important files that are not currently in my extensive catalog.
But you already have over 10,000 files. You spent all of your scholarship money on hard drives. Why do you need more files?
There are a lot of people counting on me. Indeed, if I don't keep an eye on this stream, cutting off freeloaders and continually reprioritizing the queue, I could easily crash, leaving dozens of sharers in the lurch.
You don't even talk the same.
The same as who?
Remember the day when you proposed to me, after your dramatic game-winning play? That was so romantic. What happened to the boy that dropped to his knees in the mud in front of thousands of people, many of them women who would have slept with you, to make a sacred and unbreakable commitment of eternal monogamy?
That was a truly great moment, sweetie. And a few months after it happened, I was starting to wonder if it would be the highlight of my whole life. I mean, I was worried that everything else would be anticlimactic.
What about our wedding? And our wedding night?
That would be climactic. But what about after that, Missy? Then what? Then I'd be just another washed-up jock reliving his teenage years, like some stupid mayor of a second-rate city or something.
I believe in you, Jonas! You'll find another way you can prove your incredible devotion to the American ideals of constant sacrifice for the sake of a fleeting and meaningless moment of victory in some pointless public contest of symbolic acquisition.
That's just what I'm telling you. I've found it. Right here. In file sharing.
What?
I have status. I have credibility. Babe, I've got more files than any sucker in the network. And I get the movies first. Hours after the celebrity invite previews, I got a legal MPEG version sitting right here on my hard drive. In the world of file sharing, that means status. People in the underground network respect me, babe.
They don't know who you are. You're behind a computer screen.
They know my screen name. They have my IP address. And I'll tell anyone who asks exactly who I am.
Wait, but isn't what you're doing, like, illegal? I mean, couldn't you get caught by the internet police or the record label lawyers or whoever?
Freeze! Don't try any fancy end-run quarterback fancy moves. We've got this place locked down.
You'll never take me alive. Missy, could you help me out of the chair?
Whoa! What the hell happened to you?
Leave him alone. He can't help it. He's just been spending a lot of time in that chair doing his homework and living on trans fats and corn syrup.
Dude, you need to hit the gym.
Shut up. You got a lot of nerve. I'm a star. All
Don't
I need is a couple
man.
Days
of the You gym. Can't take him.
Shut up. You want to be run in for aiding and abetting?
It's okay, Missy. I can handle these goods.
Just go quietly, Milansky.
Put your hands behind your head. Come
Get
on,
down.
Get
down. Hands behind your head.
Where is Mom?
Listen, young lady. I can't concentrate with you screaming. This isn't reality television. Don't get hysterical.
He's having my baby. You can't take my baby's daddy to jail.
Missy, no. Yes. But when? I've been spending so much time downloading my homework. Oh my God, I'm going to be a daddy. Dear God, if you get me out of this one, I'll do everything right, I swear.
I promise, I'm going to give him
six. Please, don't do that. You're almost making me feel bad if it weren't for the fact that illegal distribution of copyrighted music in both physical and digital form costs the music industry thousands of jobs and hundreds of millions of dollars every year. Never mind. You can pray in your jail cell.
No. I don't want to go to prison. Bad things will happen. I'll be violated. I'll get iced with a shank.
Leave my man alone!
What's going on? I got a call for backup.
This is embarrassing.
Tell me about it.
That is really ridiculous. But it doesn't sound like you were too involved.
I did all the grunt work, all the background investigation, all the backup, and logistics at the bust. So even if I wasn't in charge, I probably did more work than anyone.
But at least it wasn't your decision.
I don't know what's worse, McGill. I mean, just following orders is such a cliche, but that's how it felt. Like I'm some mindless drone caught up in the machine.
So what happened to the kid?
They got him all rattled, threatening him with prison time and a lifetime of working to pay off some huge fine. Then they offered him a plea deal, where he would lend his all-American football-playing face to commercials confessing his crimes and warning others not to make his big mistake.
So he got off easy.
But he could have had it even easier. These cases always fail if they stick it out. Some are even successfully countersuing the industry. But in this kid's case, he's probably secretly loving it because now he gets to be the center of attention, which is what he really wanted all along.
So it all worked out.
Yeah, right. It makes me sick. It's all a big PR campaign. It has nothing to do with defending the law.
I guess I see your point, but I still think you're overreacting. Why don't you just ask for cases that interest you more? That'll get your head back in the game.
That's not how it works in cyber. Do you get to pick your own cases?
Not exactly, but if I show a little initiative and build a good case around a tip, like one that comes in from my friend Allison, I can work it so my main focus is stuff I picked. I just have to be careful not to step on anyone's toes in the chain of command.
Wow. You think I could transfer into public corruption?
Hey, that would be cool. A lot of those guys are close to retirement. I think that's why they're so jaded. I'd be stoked to have someone else in the department who actually gets into putting 60-hour weeks into bringing down some bribe-taking politicians.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I never said I wanted to work 60-hour weeks.
Well, technically you wouldn't have to, but wouldn't that be cool?
No.
What if we found out some politician was taking bribes from the entertainment industry in order to introduce the kind of bills you were complaining about?
I might work a 50-hour week now and then for that.
Now you're talking. If you apply for a transfer, let me know. Maybe I can put in a good word for you.
Thanks, McGill.
Hi, Christine.
Oh, hey, McGill. What's up?
How's that paper going?
I'm still having writer's block. Changed your mind about the offer yet?
That's why I'm calling. I've made up my mind. I cannot do it, and I strongly advise you not to attempt to find another illegal paper source.
I swear, you are such a goody-two-shoes. Are you going to tattle on me?
As a member of the bar, I probably should. But no, I will not. Just please don't cheat.
Listen, Nick, I never needed you to write the stupid paper anyway. I just finished it.
What?
I was just making that offer to give you an excuse to finally make your move.
Really?
You don't believe me, do you? Well, now you'll never know for sure.
Christine, I don't want you to be angry with me.
I'm not angry. I'm incensed. We've been dating for 3 months, and you still haven't made your big move. I've never been with a guy like that.
Don't you find it refreshing?
Actually, no, I don't. Maybe I should, but I don't. So I'm insulted that you can be so nonchalant, and I'm angry that it bothers me so much.
I'm a romantic, and I don't want to have you at the cost of my conscience.
What's romantic is when you're willing to give something up for someone. Something big, like your precious conscience. Obviously, you're not that interested.
No, I am. It's just that...
Well, then you're going to have to prove it.
This is Allison.
You owe me a press release.
On the Salona corruption case? Already?
You were right about us being able to build a lot of our case from public records. Now we're sending more agents to Rhode Island to extend the probe.
Good job, McGill. I'll fax you a copy of the press release, along with our media list.
I think I broke up with Christine.
I'm sorry to hear that, but I really shouldn't get involved with your personal life.
You brought it up.
The last time we talked... In order to change the subject.
Sorry, I just wanted a female perspective.
Well, okay. I think we broke up. Does sound like one of you was being indecisive, and since you already said she accused you...
She wanted me to do something unethical. I said no, it wasn't wimpy at all, and she got angry and basically hung up on me.
Sounds like a definite breakup to me. Well, good for you for living by your principles. What else is new?
another Green might be joining my department.
Really? Which state party did he work for?
Oh, he was never involved as I was. But he votes for Green Party candidates. I think maybe he sends money. He's cool.
Now you can investigate twice as many corruption cases.
I don't think he's got the workaholic streak I do, but I'll enjoy working with him. He's trying to transfer from cyber.
Wouldn't it be better if all the intelligent agents were spread out in different divisions? There's got to be some way he could pursue progressive investigations from within cyber.
Yeah, I kind of thought that at first, too. But he's completely fed up with working on anti-piracy for the RIAA. You should hear some of his stories.
Oh, don't get me started on the RIAA. They're almost as anti-American as the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
When he gets his transfer, we can all meet for coffee.
This was a dramatization, a comic dramatization. But in the world of audio theater, it is said that truth is stranger than fiction, especially when it comes to the Department of Homeland Security. Imagine if you will. No, don't imagine. See our links posted at sagebrushvariety.blogspot.com if you will. Two CVS executives are accused of paying State Senator John Solana to advance the drug company's legislative agenda. The FBI's public corruption investigates and shows that the senator's voting record changed 180 degrees on issues of interest to the company after he started taking gifts, such as cash and tickets to celebrity golf tournaments. Meanwhile, another department of the Bureau, Cyber, continues to bow to pressure from Congress and their lobbyists in the entertainment industry by spending resources on intimidation-based investigations unlikely to yield prosecutions of people exchanging music over the internet for no reward beyond notoriety with other file sharers or simply out of compulsion. The industry uses the downloader's fear of the FBI to pressure them to settle meritless cases. Seem too silly to be true? Believe it.
Homeland Security, Level Red, was written by Robert McMinn and was performed and produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with the help of a grant from the Green Institute and support from Radio Boise. Learn more about the topics in this show at sagebrushvariety.org. You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, sagebrushvariety.org. Political commentary and satire with an irreverent twist. From Boise, Idaho.
The Sagebrush Variety Show players have grown something in our yards for the past several years. We got started as gardeners for several reasons. Most importantly, a resistance to the predominance of pesticide-laced and genetically modified food that dominate the grocery stores, a desire for self-sufficiency, and, to be honest, Epicurean pretensions that were rarely satisfied by ingredients that were shrunk-wrapped, refrigerated, and trucked across continents. Some years, our activism took priority over all else, and our garden suffered. We don't regret that, but in the ensuing years, big agribusiness has grown more and more predatory in their attempts to corner the food market, pursuing multiple strategies from chemical saturation to trademark piracy, and even entering the organic market just to chip away at the standards as well as the values of that movement. Meanwhile, a post-oil economy is looking like it might come sooner than even we industry critics once anticipated. So this year, our garden is part of our activism. After all, we always said that a major part of the Sagebrush Variety Show agenda is to make inedible lawns and the pesticides, water waste, and obnoxious lawnmowers that make them possible an object of derision and scorn. But you know what? Forget about our politics. What we're growing tastes really good. Whether you're a fat cat neocon ordered by your doctor to back off the red meat or die, or a limousine liberal fond of the Food Network and public radio shows about rare wines, costly cheeses, and cows grown on remote Japanese islands. We're one up on you. Our harvests are so bodaciously fresh that even the most humble of vegetables makes your caviar pale in comparison. Are you going to sit back and let us have something you don't? Keep in mind, there are vegetables for every season and climate, so it's never too late to plant. And realize that having the leisure time to putter about the garden can be a sign of status. And to our comrades in the honest classes, if we can pull this off, so can you. The pick of the week for today's show is the carrot. There may be more written about the carrot than any other vegetable. The trouble with profiling the carrot isn't as much in rooting out information as editing it down to fit in this humble segment. The difference between a store carrot and a garden carrot is a chasm so great that if it were manifested in actual space, it could contain all of the famous canyons on the planet and the seven wonders of the world. Only the tomato is more mind-bendingly dissimilar in its corporate and homegrown versions. In the 1980s, corporate food producers developed the baby carrot concept. Not baby carrots at all, but in fact overgrown fiber sticks, ideal for stuffing through machines that peel and uniformly cut them into ready-to-eat snack food. The idea was that consumers would buy these in an act of contrition for themselves and families who had grown guiltily flabby as a result of eating trans-fat-laden processed snacks. This supposedly healthful substitute for ice cream or chips in a can or black-and-white cookies would so demoralize the consumer that they would return to their junk food eating habits never to experience real food, being under the false impression that they had once tried good food and hated it. Real carrots, in their many varieties, have complex and thoroughly stimulating flavors. One distinguishable group of carrots were domesticated in Central Asia, probably in what is now Afghanistan, in the 10th century or possibly earlier. These eastern carrots' surviving relatives are generally purple or yellow in color, and they tend to have branches as opposed to the single cylinder type more common in the West. The western carrot emerged in the Netherlands in the 15th or 16th century. These varieties can be white, yellow, red, or even purple. It's quite possible that one of the reasons the orange-colored variety is now dominant is that early cultivators saw it as an emblem of the House of Orange and the struggle for Dutch independence. The non-orange carrots are becoming more popular for growers and consumers enlightened to the possibilities of the vegetable. Carrots are nutritional powerhouses. No other vegetable or fruit contains as much carotene, which the body converts to vitamin A. It is also notably packed with vitamins B and C, as well as calcium pectate, which has been found to have cholesterol-lowering properties. It's rich in mineral salts and vitamins B, C, D, and E. Raw carrots are an excellent source of vitamin A and potassium. They contain vitamin C, B6, thiamine, folic acid, and magnesium. Cooked carrots are also an excellent source of vitamin A, a good source of potassium, and contain vitamin B6, copper, folic acid, and magnesium. Carrots are a bit unusual in that they are more nutritious cooked than raw. Juicing it or just chewing well can increase the benefit of raw carrots, but ultimately, the human body cannot break down all the nutrients because of the tough cellular walls of the carrot. Cooking breaks those walls down, but don't overcook them. Lightly cooked is sufficient. Ancient medicinal uses of the carrot include treatment for cancerous tumors, bladder infection, bad digestion, to bring on menstruation, and as first aid for venomous snake bites, dog bites, and syphilis. Ulcerous sores were treated with a compress of ground-up carrots. The Greek foot soldiers who hid in the Trojan horse were said to have consumed ample quantities of raw carrots to inactivate their bowels. The ancient Greeks thought carrots made men more passionate in the act of love, and women more submissive. The Romans believed the same, and first-century Roman Emperor Caligula, known to be insane and sadistic, fed his entire Roman Senate a banquet comprised only of carrot dishes because he thought he would be entertained at the sight of the senators fornicating like beasts of the field. We don't know how this experiment worked out. Carrots have long been believed to improve eyesight, but we found at least one source, Wikipedia, that claims it's an urban legend. Their explanation It is believed that disinformation introduced in 1940 by John Cat's Eyes Cunningham during the Battle of Britain was an attempt to cover up the discovery and use of radar technologies. It reinforced existing German folklore and helped to encourage children to eat the vegetable. Lack of vitamin A can, however, cause poor night vision, and can be restored by adding vitamin A back into the diet. The root and leaves of the carrot were used as a yellow dye in 16th and century Europe, and are still used in France to brighten the color of butter and cheeses. Carrot tops were considered a fashion statement when worn by the ladies of the English court in their hats or their hair. Some people eat carrot tops. We're not sure if this is a regional or national practice, but in this country, people who eat the tops most often cook them in a soup. It is also suggested by a few that they can be mixed in a salad or tabbouleh. They do have chlorophyll and many of the same nutrients that are in the carrot, but we've tried carrot tops and simply don't like the taste, and we rarely say that about any fresh vegetable. However, we may simply be growing varieties that grow inferior-tasting tops. Either way, we're quite happy to feed them to Bucky Bacaw's chickens. They seem to really love them, we know it's good for them, and it's one of the ways the Sagebrush Variety Show farm has so successfully avoided commercial chicken feed while still providing for all the chickens' nutritional needs. We tried a few varieties of carrots. Here are our reactions.
These carrots are so crunchy, you have to be careful, you may hurt yourself, as I did. These carrots resonate. The vibrant, strapping, swollen roots. Very perfumey. Almost leafy.
A subtle carrot, utterly lacking in presumptions. With unimpeachable etiquette, it whispers of baby clementine, hummingbird breath, and the first snowfall of the season. The moment before it hits Lake Pend d'Oreille. Before the introduction of milfoil, or 2,4-D, of course.
They're relatively easy to grow and pack a nice spicy punch. These carrots are to bagged grocery store carrots, as fresh home-baked rolls are to Wonder Bread.
Carrots have a taste all their very own. A convenient vegetable, they can be used in almost any serving. Its rigid structure facilitates dicing, slicing, or most any preparation. Carrots are the vegetarian's reliable friend.
If you like what you hear and want more information on growing this or other crops, visit our website at radioboise.org/sagebrush or email us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Or, if you're already gardening, we'd love to hear what you're growing and eating and how you and your companions describe the experience. Tune in next week for more Sagebrush Variety Show farm reports. And remember, say no to corporate food.
This week's Sagebrush Variety Show was conceived, written, performed, and produced by Robert McMinn, Kevin Bayhouse, April Hoy, and Gwen Sankirico, and was funded in part by a grant from the Green Institute. For more information on the content discussed on this program, visit our website at sagebrushvariety.org. Write to us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Thanks for listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show.